Call a meeting to order. This is State Government Finance Committee for Thursday, April 14th, 2011. We have a quorum, and so would someone move the minutes from yesterday?
Mr. Chairman, I'll move the minutes.
Representative Murray moves the minutes from yesterday. Any additions or corrections? Hearing none, all in favor of the minutes signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. The minutes are approved. Members, House File 210 is back before us. Welcome, Representative Kiffmeyer. And Representative Benson, I believe you're going to move the bill.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, thank you. I move that we move and pass House File 210 and that it be re-referred to the Transportation Committee.
Okay. Representative Kiffmeyer, you have an amendment, I understand, author's amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. Glad to be with you again this morning. And yes, Mr. Chairman, I do. I have the, first of all, Mr. Chairman, I have the DE6 amendment. And then to the DE6, I have the amendment that includes the fiscal numbers. And, Mr. Chairman, I'm not exactly sure in which order you would like me to proceed with them.
Representative Kiffmeyer, we need to first of all move the DE6 amendment to get the bill in the shape that the author prefers. Representative Benson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to move the DE6 amendment.
All in favor of the DE6 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. And then the...
It's the A32 amendment, Mr. Chairman.
A32. Representative Benson.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move the A32 amendment.
And this is to get the bill in the shape that the author prefers. All in favor of the A32 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. The bill is now in the shape that the author prefers. Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The purpose for coming back to the committee today was for amendments and then also for to complete the fiscal work. And so with the A32 amendment, Mr. Chairman, I have met with Secretary of State Office. I have met with Ms. Roberts and others as well. And we have the updated fiscal note that also matches the DE6 amendment as amended to the House File 210. And so, Mr. Chairman, there were some in clarifying the language. The fiscal note was reduced. And then in meeting with staff, we were able to place those numbers in the appropriate areas of the bill. And, Mr. Chairman, with that, the House File 210 is complete and ready to be passed on. And I'll be glad to answer any questions.
Questions for the author. Representative Simon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Kiffmeyer, thank you for your patience on this. And I just have a question here about the numbers, obviously. As I've said before, I don't think that fiscal notes are holy and can never be changed. I think if there's a principled basis for changing them, then we ought to have that discussion. But just my quick read here, and this is the first time I've seen the specifics of the amendment, you're calling for a total of, let's see, about my back of the napkin math is about $3.8 million. Is that right?
Representative Kiffmeyer.
Well, Mr. Chairman and Representative Simon, I would prefer that the fiscal staff would just confirm that for you.
Ms. Roberts.
Mr. Chair, members, the total appropriations in this bill, which include appropriations to the Secretary of State, Department of Administration, and also Public Safety, are total $4.499 million. That includes $3.6 million from the general fund and $880,000 from the Help America Vote Act.
Representative Simon.
Thank you. And Ms. Roberts, so that's what this amendment does, basically. Is that right, the A32?
Ms. Roberts.
Mr. Chair, Representative Simon, yes. This amendment inserts the numbers for the Department of Administration and the Secretary of State.
Okay. So,
Representative Simon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So just so I understand, so the total amount that we're paying for here is the $4.499 million.
Ms. Roberts.
That's correct.
And
Representative Simon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Either for Ms. Roberts or for the author. The fiscal note, the most recent fiscal note I'm looking at here, seems fairly close to that. It's roughly 5.1, just shy of 5.2. So there's a slight discrepancy between the 4.499 and the 5.2. Can someone just explain the principal basis for the departure?
Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Simon and members. The departure is that I felt that the $208,000 for the Department of Administration, that would amount to about 8.5% of the total contract. And the fact that you have a large contract is not, to me, a matter of substance. It's contracting work, no matter the dollar amount. And so we took a look at some of the other records and other research and just made a legislative decision to appropriate $100,000 to the Department of Administration for contracting instead of the $208,000, and that is why you see the difference. I believe that would make it add up.
Representative Simon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate that. So that's a principal basis for about roughly $100,000 of that gap. The $208,000, you respectfully believed it was more like $100,000, so that explains $100,000 of the departure. Is there anything else in there, and maybe this is for Ms. Roberts as well, that was the basis of a principal basis for the departure from the formal fiscal note?
Ms. Roberts?
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry, I should have clarified. When I was giving you the $4.5 million number before, that did not include the special revenue amount that was showing up for public safety. So that $399,000 is one of the differences. And then the other difference was the Secretary of State connectivity piece.
So,
Representative Simon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just trying to understand. Maybe I should ask it this way. So if we start, if the starting point is the fiscal note that we have before us, pardon me, which is, you know, I'm rounding here, obviously, but it's 5,180,000 dollars. I'm just trying to figure out what proportion of that does this bill acknowledge, and then what's the principal basis for the departure. Maybe that's the best way. So, of the fiscal note, what is the sort of discount being taken?
Ms. Roberts.
Mr. Chair, members, I'll walk through the differences from the fiscal note. Starting with total all funds of $5,180,000, that includes the general fund, Help America Vote Act, and the special revenue amount. The two differences are $108,000 less for Department of Administration for their contract costs related to the public education campaign, and then $174,000 less for the Secretary of State than they had estimated for the connectivity piece. So those are the two major differences. And then also note that $880,000 of the Secretary of State's costs that show up in the fiscal note as a general fund expense are being paid for out of the PAPA fund.
Representative Simon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so that was my next question. Thank you, Ms. Roberts. That makes it more clear for me, at least. So on the HABA funds, what then, if this amendment goes on, if the bill is passed out of the committee, what would be left of the HABA funds? Do you know that, or is that really a question for the Secretary of State's office?
Ms. Roberts?
Mr. Chair, and the Secretary of State's office may want to clarify this, but I believe the last projection we had for what would be left at the end of this fiscal year and carry forward into the next biennium was $2.5 million. So the remaining amount would be $1.6
million. Okay. Thanks.
Further discussion? Questions of the author? Representative Simon?
I didn't know, Mr. Chair, whether you were ready for amendments. There is one amendment, at least, that I'm claiming. But
certainly, if there are no further questions at this point, if there's any other amendments, we'll take those now. Uh, the A31 amendment?
Yes.
Is that your amendment?
It is.
Representative Simon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll claim the A31 amendment. The A31 amendment is simply an effort to compensate local units of government for the projected costs. Now, I want to try to practice what I preach here. I understand that the bill has changed since the last local fiscal impact note. So this $8.3 million may or may not be what the bill costs local units of government, our townships, our cities, etc., now that the bill has been amended since last Thursday. But I don't want to make up a number. I don't want to try to estimate. There is a pending local fiscal impact note update from MMB. They have cautioned that it's going to take a few days. So hopefully by the time this gets to Ways and Means, there will be a more real number. But rather than just substitute my own judgment for theirs, and knowing that this $8.3 million is a placeholder based on the last local impact note, which may or may not bear any relation to the current bill, I want to at least be consistent and put in the last number that we actually have that someone has verified. And if it needs to be changed based on the new local impact note, we can do that. But the principle of the amendment is just to essentially reimburse local units of government for their projected costs based on the bill. That's it. That's the whole amendment. And I'd ask for a roll call.
Roll call has been requested. Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Simon and members. And I do not support this amendment for two reasons. Number one, we do not know because it is not based on the current or the current version of the bill, neither that there is an expense in particular to the entities listed or in that amount. And is certainly something that, as we have worked forward on the photo ID cost of implementation, just would like to mention that it used to be that the local units of government did software. They each had their own software in some years past. Some had it, some didn't, in regards to keeping track of our voter registration. I mean, at one point it was the index cards and Rolodex file and those kinds of methodologies. But as the years went on, there was a time at which all that was transferred, even before the Help America Vote Act, into a state voter registration system. And then it was at that point that the state was able to have a partnership with the counties in particular. And so most of the time, the data that is collected at the county level, precinct cities to the counties, and then is uploaded to the state or entered as it is now directly into the state web-based system. So that is still there for them to use. That is the software that the state is absorbing the cost of developing the actual software. And there is savings to the local units of government as well. And this amendment does not recognize that and is not consistent with the current language of the bill. And so I would ask for a no vote.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Kiffmeyer. You know, I've received communication from some of my townships that don't have machines, don't have DSL. They may be atypical, but I'm just wondering if you have anything, what you think the average cost to implement this would be for a township in greater Minnesota.
Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Representative Erdahl, for the question. This has no cost to the townships. There's not a mandate to them to use this equipment. There is not a mandate to them to have a DSL connection or any other kind of connection, in particular to the townships. This is an optional, and it is a circumstance by which the counties would make a determination, and they have an optional paper-based method by which they can do the verifications. Currently, that is the language of the bill, and so, Representative Erdahl, there is not a cost in this case to these townships. They already do elections. They already are required to conduct those elections. Those are already requirements of the local units of government.
Representative Winkler.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. I wasn't sure I'd ask to be recognized, but I do have a question as it happens.
Okay.
I was trying to point to Representative Kahn having her hand up, trying to be helpful to the administrator.
Okay.
But I do have a question. Representative Kiffmeyer, we have a local impact note for $8 million. It's for an earlier version of the bill. I understand that the bill is evolving in order to reduce the state's impact. And I think a new local impact note based on the delete everything is being prepared. The question I have is, if that local impact note comes back with a cost, would it be your intention to appropriate money from the state to pay for the cost at the local level of administering this new program?
Representative Kipmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Winkler. In regards to any future fiscal note and the amounts and the rationale and all of that would be involved, that would be a consideration, but I have no ability at this time to make a commitment because I do not have that new local note in hand nor the opportunity to read the assumptions and justifications as I've worked very hard on the current fiscal note.
Representative Winkler.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kipmeyer, well, maybe you could enlighten us a little bit on the path that this bill is going to take. This is a finance bill. I think it has to go to transportation. It has to go to ways and means, obviously. It has to go to the floor. So my assumption is that there won't be major changes to the bill after it leaves this committee. Obviously, you don't control everything that happens in other committees, but my assumption is that you're not going to offer further delete everything amendments since we've now dealt with the cost here, or we are dealing with it. So the question, I guess, is as a local impact note comes in, would you be as open to work on your bill to address local costs as you have been on the state costs?
Representative Kipmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Representative Winkler. As I say again, that certainly in reviewing any future fiscal impact notes, I'd be glad to take a look at them, read their assumptions, have discussions about them, but I have no commitments for the future. My focus has been absolutely as on the state component and been my first and foremost consideration. And also, this bill also addresses these local impacts as well because it is an optional use, and there's optional in the use. There's also savings that attributes only to the local units of government, not to the state, in the implementation of the features of this bill.
Representative Winkler.
Thank you. Well, I mean, I understand that's that may well be true. I don't know. I'm not a complete expert in your bill and how it will affect local units of government, but it's important to remember that those elections at the local level are funded through property taxes primarily, and any cost that we pass on to them from the state as a mandate without funding is a burden on property taxpayers. And it may be that it comes back zero, that the local impact is zero, or maybe it comes back as a savings. But if it comes back at a cost, it seems to me that it would be just as responsible to look at the property tax impact as it would be to look at the general fund impact before passing a bill. And I hope that even though you don't want to commit to that now, that there's the same level of concern about the cost at the local level as there is at the state level as this bill proceeds.
Representative Kahn.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I guess this would only be with the consent of Representative Simon, but I think I have a possible compromise from the position that, you know, I tend to agree with Representative Kipmeyer that it might not be the most responsible thing to put in a number that we know is going to change when we get another local fiscal note. I don't want to get into the situation of sending bills forward with a blank in the appropriation, but I do think we do owe some assurance to the local units of government that they're not going to be hit with a bill that they're totally unable to pay. And so I would suggest that the language that after, you know, and I have the words that would be stricken out and added, but I would suggest that we change C to say it is intended that the Secretary of State will reimburse costs incurred by counties, cities, and townships who implement the requirements of this act. Secretary of State shall conduct a cost survey to determine the appropriate reimbursement for each unit of government. We expect that we won't see that till 2012. We'll be back here for another year. We can you know, and hopefully if we can't put this in the next week or so, we can also put it in the next year. But, you know, I'm not willing, I don't know if Representative Simon would think that would be a reasonable compromise.
Representative Simon.
Sorry, I know it's an improper thing to do. So we can just vote on your amendment and then, if necessary, vote on mine.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn, I thank you for that. I appreciate that. I think, for myself, I'm more comfortable leaving it as is just because it's based on the last official report, knowing that it's not pegged to the current version of the bill. I just want to be consistent with what my position was.
Okay.
Last week. That's my personal preference.
I'm not offering an amendment at this point.
Seeing no further discussion on the A31 amendment, the clerk will call the roll.
Anderson? Bannion?
No.
Benson?
No.
Downey?
No.
Gauthier?
Yes.
Green?
Yes.
Gunther? Hayden? Kahn?
Yes.
Lanning?
No.
Leidiger?
No.
Lilly?
Yes.
Lohmer?
No.
McElfatrick?
No.
Murphy?
Yes.
Murray?
No.
Simon?
Yes.
Slavik? Stensrud?
No.
Erdahl?
No.
Winkler?
Yes.
There being seven yes and ten no, the amendment is not adopted.
Well, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Kahn.
I'd like to offer the amendment, which would read, and I can pass it to the clerk, it is intended that the Secretary of State will reimburse costs incurred by counties, cities, and townships to implement the requirements of this act. The Secretary of State shall conduct a cost survey to determine the appropriate reimbursement for each unit of government. And then the last line is struck. And I'd like to move that amendment, and I'd like to call for a roll call vote.
Okay. Mr. Shepherd, do you have that?
Yeah. Mr. Chair, yes, I do.
Okay. Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Kahn, and I respectfully also ask for no vote on this amendment. Representative Kahn, it's just really kind of amazing. I'm back here today in front of this committee, and last time we had a older fiscal note, and then we got a fiscal note, and I needed to go back and do some more work and come back to the committee and do some more work, and now here we are dealing with this amendment again. And, Mr. Chairman, I think we have the bill in order, and I just respectfully ask for no vote on this amendment as well.
Well,
Representative Kahn.
Mr. Chairman, you know, the bill has come before us with amendments at each time changing. We have not been able to get the local fiscal note. If this amendment fails, and I would hope that this is reasonable, that people understand there are going to be costs to local units of government, and that they are even more stressed than the state because they don't have the resources that the state has. And so my next motion, I know you're not supposed to do this, to tell what you're going to do, but my next motion, if this amendment does pass, then I'm comfortable letting the proponents of this bill pass it on to the next committee. If this amendment doesn't pass, then my next motion or my next suggestion will be that the bill stay in this committee until we can fill in an appropriate blank other than the $8,300,000. So that's, you know, from what you've just said, I would assume that you would then accept that solution if we don't pass at least this intention to be able to do that. So, and I asked for a roll call, didn't I?
Yes. Representative Kahn, we don't want to pass a bill out of this committee that has blanks.
Doesn't have a blank.
But your amendment, in effect, gives a blank check to the Secretary of State's office to do whatever that office wishes in terms of billing are identifying potential costs here. And so, in a sense, to me, it's almost like passing a blank check, giving a blank check that's already signed to the Secretary of State's office. And so I, too, would urge a no vote.
Well,
Representative Kyle.
Representative Lanning, it clearly doesn't. You know that no money is spent unless it's appropriated. It doesn't appropriate money. It refers to the cost survey, which comes from the from Representative Kiffmeyer's language, and it'll clearly be a decision. It's in a sense a placeholder, but without the without saying that you're making an appropriation. You're saying that you're going to look at this in the next subject, or maybe even in the next year. You're done, because we do not need. This is, this is something that we're not going to fully need until the 2012, assuming we don't have any more, a lot more special elections, till 2012. So we do have until next year to deal with this. But I feel more comfortable giving local units of government the assurance that we will deal with it. So,
Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I'm a little, I think it's a little surprising to have the implication that somehow Representative Kahn's amendment is not responsible, because it doesn't appropriate money. It makes a commitment from the state to the local units of government that this won't be just an unfunded mandate for them. And the reason there isn't a local impact note is because this bill has a delete everything about every 2 days. And a local impact note it's not possible to turn that around as quickly. I understand the reason for the delete everything amendments and the desire to bring the cost down, but it seems to me far more responsible to make a commitment to pay the local units of government, who are the professionals who actually conduct our elections and should be trusted on this issue more than anybody else. Why it would be irresponsible to commit to them to pay for this, while we at the legislature are continuing to evolve this bill day after day and not making any kind of clear commitment that the action that we take here on a very controversial piece of legislation won't just end up in their lap at the local level. So it seems to be Representative Kahn's amendment is far more responsible than doing nothing. And the more responsible thing to do would be to not pass the bill until we had a final version or a semi-final version and a local impact note to actually assess the costs. That would be the most responsible thing to do. But Representative Kahn's at least is you know, not just completely ignoring the local impact.
Further discussion on the Kahn amendment. If not,
can I ask you a quick question?
Yeah, Representative Banyan.
Thank you. This just gets back to something that I noticed when we were reading the fiscal note on the DE5, and it's still here on this one. On page 13, under local government costs, since that's what we're talking about, local government must pay for computers and peripherals for electronic rosters, if used. Representative Kiffmeyer, the words "if used," what do those mean to me? Does that mean this is optional? I seem to recall I cannot remember her name, the person from Hennepin County talking about whether or not they would adopt this. Can you remind me whether or not these costs are costs that the counties will have to incur, or are these costs that they have a choice whether to incur?
Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Banyan. Yes, Representative Banyan, you read it correctly. It is a choice, and for them it will be a cost-benefit. They will take a look at the methods of accomplishing this, and it will be their choice, and based upon the benefits to them locally.
Well,
Representative Kahn.
Well, Mr. Chairman, you know, the benefits are just what we're talking about are, and I'm thinking about some of the precincts in my district, which have an enormous amount of turnover and so forth. The not doing this would cause an incredible, and Representative Banyan probably has some of those with St. Cloud students in his area. The benefits, the disbenefits would be incredible tie-ups, incredibly long lines. I mean, I've had, in 2008, I had precincts which had, at 8 o'clock when the polls closed, I had lines extending around the block at some precincts, which I imagine is something that most of the other people in this legislature don't have. The additional time delay of not having the best kind of electronic thing would just be intolerable for some local units of government. Obviously, the choice makes sense, because I imagine that there are precincts, you know, just as if we'd only get to some of my other bills, like cutting the number of counties from 87 down to 10, maybe we could reduce some of those costs. But it's not a real option in some precincts if we're adding additional precinct procedures that we don't have to add additional ways to deal with them.
Representative Simon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think it's worth noting two things. First, the local fiscal impact note is a separate document, and while there may be narrative in this fiscal note, the bottom line of this fiscal note that we have before us, dated yesterday, is on page one, where it says total costs or savings to the state. So while there may be narrative in there about the local fiscal impact, that really isn't a part of the bottom line. It's added value for us, but the real impact will come in a separate document. I'm holding up the separate one from last week, from April 7th, but that will be a separate document. And while it's true that we'll all have to agree on some sort of estimate about what percentage of local units of the government will choose to use poll books, for example, that is a variable cost. But we know that if this bill is enacted into law, there will be certain sunk set costs. For example, Rachel Smith testified last week. That was the person from Hennepin County, Representative Banyan. She testified that at least for Hennepin County, she estimated that because of the provisional ballot requirement in this bill, that would be one extra election judge per precinct. So there's some fixed sunk cost there, regardless of the poll book issue. So I expect there to be some local cost if Ms. Smith is to be believed, and even if only she is to be believed and no one else, if somehow only Hennepin County has these costs of one per one extra election judge per precinct, I think it's safe to say there is going to be some fiscal impact regardless of the poll book. So I think the issue here is, are we going to pay them or are we going to make them eat the cost?
Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Kiffmeyer, I haven't had an opportunity to read through or delete everything as carefully as I had thought, but as I look at some of the local government costs, they have costs related to provisional balloting, record retention, changing the absentee ballot board, and adding more requirements, costs related to employee training. Do those costs disappear in your bill? Do we get rid of provisional balloting, for example, and you delete everything? I didn't think so.
Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. As a matter of fact, that's an important point to be made here, Representative Winkler, that many of these provisions, even though the DE6 is language for today, largely also to help deal with the fiscal, making sure that all the fiscal issues were there, but it's the same, basically the same language in regards to DE5 or the versions before, and so yes, those are still the same.
Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I mean, it's not, just there's a couple million dollars in costs to the local units of government just doing the basics of a photo ID with provisional balloting system. So there's no way to get around that. So there's at least a couple million there. And Representative Banyan, if you had flipped over to page 14, you would have seen that the fiscal note says that if you assume half the precincts in the state have poll books, the cost is $27 million. So. So we don't want to start bringing in the poll book costs into this fiscal note unless you want to find, $27 million suddenly to do it. I think that's just an unrelated issue to this bill, because there are certain costs that will be borne by local property taxpayers if you implement this new program.
Members, this bill, as it is before us, acknowledges the fact that there are additional costs that the Secretary of State's office would incur. And those costs in this bill now are essentially covered. Almost all of those projected costs are covered. I think that established the intent. The intent is that with regard to this bill, if we're going to pass it, we've got to be willing to pay for the costs that are incurred. The fact of the matter is we do not know what the new fiscal note will be for local impact. And until we do, just passing a blank check or a blank is not the way to go, in my view. And, you know, once that note comes back, we will have to deal with that. And I personally, from my standpoint, whatever influence I might have, I'm going to advocate that we cover those costs of local impact. But this is not the place to do it the way it's before us right now. So, Mr. Shepherd, would you read the amendment as it currently reads?
Mr. Chair and members, the amendment would be on as if referring to the A31 on page 22 after line 33, there'd be a new paragraph C that would say, it is intended that the Secretary of State reimburse costs incurred by cities, counties, and townships to implement the requirements of this act. The Secretary of State shall conduct a cost survey to determine the appropriate reimbursement for each unit of government.
A roll call having been requested on the amendment.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Kahn.
I just want to point out, in answer to your last statement, there is no appropriation in this. It merely expresses an intention, which is then passed on to the either to the Secretary of State's, you know, at some point we could even say, which I didn't do, that the Secretary of State is required to reimburse the costs and just let the Secretary, that's kind of like a cut or a mandate to the Secretary of State's office if you don't want to do it as a mandate to local units of government. But this is to give some reassurance to local units of government as this goes forward that the state intends them not to be overburdened by another cost. It is not an appropriation. There is not one not one penny with the language I've chosen, although as I said I did show how it could be made stronger. There is not one penny of funding that goes out. This just shows local units of government that we intend to either this year or in the next year, once we have a factual basis for what their costs are, a better estimate as to what their costs are, that we intend to do it. And anyone who votes no is saying that they just don't care what happens to the finances of those local units of government.
Representative Kahn, that last statement is totally unfair.
Yeah.
Representative Slaw.
Mr. Chair, just a quick...
I'm sorry. The vote would show an indication of unwillingness to deal with it at this time.
Well, Representative Kahn, that's your interpretation. That's not an interpretation I share. Representative Slaw.
Mr. Chair, as long as we're talking about interpretations, where is, when you said there's another place this will be taken care of, is that Ways and Means that you think that the fiscal, the local impact note, or is what committee specifically?
Representative Slawick, this bill has to go to transportation next, and from there it has to go to Ways and Means. And hopefully by the time it gets to Ways and Means, we'll have that new fiscal note that this issue can be addressed then in Ways and Means.
Mr. Chair, as you know, I sit on Ways and Means, so we'll look forward to seeing it there.
Okay. Call the roll.
Lanning.
No.
Anderson.
No.
Bannion.
No.
Benson.
No.
Downey.
No.
Gauthier.
Yes.
Green.
Yes.
Gunther.
No.
Hayden.
Yes.
Kahn.
Yes.
Leidiger.
No.
Lilly.
Yes.
Lomer.
No.
McElfatrick.
No.
Murphy.
Yes.
Murray.
No.
Simon.
Yes.
Slawick.
Yes.
Stensrud.
No.
Erdahl.
No.
Winkler.
Yes.
There being 9 yes and 12 no, the amendment is not adopted.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Kahn.
My next motion is then that the bill be laid over in this committee until we have the local fiscal note and can decide on that cost, which going from the last one is more than the appropriation for the bill. It's not a trivial thing to just be sent off as a round off to the next committee. And without giving any kind of indication to the, you know, to local units of government that we're going to pick it up, I think we ought to know what costs we're going to put in for the state, particularly with your statement that you believe that we should pay these costs.
There's a motion to lay this over. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? No.
No.
Motion does not prevail. Further discussion. Representative Winkler.
Mr. Chairman, I apologize. I should have done a better job of preparing myself. There's a fiscal bill deadline, isn't there? And I wonder how this bill fits in with those time limitations.
I'm not sure you're... Say more. Explain your question more.
Sorry, Mr. Chair. If this bill has to go to Transportation and Ways and Means, it has to go through two more committee stops before it clears the finance committees of the House. And what I wonder is, what's the deadline for doing so?
Representative Winkler, the March 25th deadline was for the omnibus bills only, is my understanding.
And Mr. Chair, is there a deadline for fiscal bills? Otherwise, typically there has been in years past.
My understanding, Representative Winkler, is that the March 25th was the deadline for the omnibus finance bills, and that was met by our committee and all the other committees.
And Mr. Chair, I wonder if anybody else could address whether there is a deadline for finance bills, because typically the only bill in the past that hasn't had a deadline is the tax bill. But I think even the tax bill, because of the omnibus bill deadline, was subject to that. So are other finance bills subject to any kind of deadline this year?
I don't know if anybody can further answer your question. Representative Erdahl.
Well, Representative Lanning, Representative Winkler, with the legacy funding division, with our bill, we don't have a deadline.
Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, I don't know the details, but I heard that May 6th is some kind of deadline.
I think that's the second deadline.
I believe that's the second policy deadline. Representative Slawick?
Mr. Chair, Representative Winkler, I think that in the past, when we've been in the majority, that it is the omnibus bills that have a deadline and that other bills can travel separately, even though they have fiscal. Well, that's my understanding from the past sessions.
Well.
Thank you, Representative Slawick. Representative Kahn?
Well, I hate to be too helpful for a bill I dislike so much, but the general procedure, and this has certainly happened, which may happen again this year if we're going to have one, is that bills that miss any deadline, which we've said of any sort except the adjournment deadline, go through the Rules Committee. And we've consistently, for example, have sent the pensions bill through the Rules Committee because we've consistently not made the deadline, which looks like that may happen again this year.
Well, that's correct.
Mr. Chairman, that was my point.
Representative Winkler.
Is that I thought there likely would be another committee that it would have to go through to get referred to Rules to avoid the deadline, but I guess this may have to end up in Rules anyway. I suppose Representative Holbrook could just place it on the calendar as the Chair of Ways and Means. I'm not sure, but you know, at some point, we do have to deal with this local issue, and it seems to me this is the best committee to do that in. But if there's another committee that deals with local finances, I guess that would be property taxes. I don't suppose this bill has to go there, although the argument could be made. But what's the right jurisdiction for dealing with local impacts? If we're passing it out, where should we take it up?
Representative Downey.
Mr. Chair, I'd ask for a roll call on the passage of the bill.
Roll call has been requested on the passage of the bill. Any further discussion? Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, discussion on the bill?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kiffmeyer, I don't have another opportunity. And a couple of the testifiers on the day that we had testimony indicated that they were testifying based on their experiences as poll challengers, and that led me to have a couple questions about the provisional balloting, if you will allow me to ask those questions. And then Representative Winkler just asked, is the provisional balloting part of the optional? Is that something that a community could choose to have or not to have, or is provisional balloting a set part of, an absolute part of the bill?
Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Murphy. Provisional ballots is not an optional. Provisional ballots in this bill is a requirement.
Okay, thank you.
And mentioned, by the way, Mr. Chairman, that in Wisconsin they had about 400 provisional ballots, and they also have an election process that they have gone through, but they have provisional ballots and many other states as well. Wisconsin had 400. So I think that, you know, it is one of those. We have examples from other states on the numbers and so on, but it is a part of the bill, part of the photo ID requirement.
And
Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kiffmeyer, I read in one of the documents that I picked up after that meeting was that about 80% of the provisional ballots are not counted in the other states. Is that correct?
Representative Kiffmeyer.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Murphy, that was not my statement, so I do not have any factual basis in regards to that in those numbers for you. Today, this is a Finance Committee, so, Mr. Chairman, I was out of respect for your committee, prepared to focus on the making sure all the financial numbers were in order here for this bill.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr.
Murphy.
Chair. And I accept that, but I may ask that at a different time then. And Mr. Chair, Representative Kiffmeyer, I read in the House research summary that provisional balloting is only for pre-registered voters. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Representative Murphy. No, provisional ballots is for anybody in the polling place on Election Day, whether they're pre-registered or registering on Election Day. If they don't meet the requirements of the bill as written, then they would be able to use voting by a provisional ballot.
Okay. And
Representative Murphy?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kiffmeyer, can there be provisional ballots for all elections, like or referendums?
Representative Kiffmeyer.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Murphy, the ballot is in its entirety. So most of the time in these particular, not naming the specific referendum, but, you know, the ballot, whatever the ballot is, would be a provisional ballot, whatever would be on that ballot.
Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, so a district, school district, Northern St. Louis County, that are arguing about whether when schools should be open or closed, and they have a election or they have a referendum, and people have to come there for that school issue. Could someone challenge someone that shows up that day and say, I want that person to have the provisional ballot?
Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Representative Murphy. In regards to the, you're referring, I believe, in specifically to a poll challenger. The main purpose of a provisional ballot is that if you don't meet the ID requirement, that you would cast a provisional ballot and then have time to come back afterwards and confirm the information, as other voters do on Election Day.
Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, Representative Meyer, I understand that, but would that be for a school referendum issue?
Mr. Chairman and members, yes, this would be for all elections.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And that leads to a problem, Mr. Chair, because if a person is challenged, Representative Kiffmeyer was challenged in that situation in particular, then that person has up to 7 days to go to the county auditor's office, which is about 200 miles in one particular case anyway, from up there down to Duluth, the county auditor's office. And what are the chances that that person will have the opportunity to do that within 7 days?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Kiffmeyer.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Murphy, are you saying then that when there is a school district, that in order for people to vote, they would have to drive 200 hours? I mean,
no,
200
I'm
miles
if they
to
were
vote?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kiffmeyer, I'm saying that if someone challenged them at that polling place and a provisional ballot was allowed, then that person would have to, not at the polling place, take care of it, but have to go to the auditor's office, and the auditor's office is 200 miles away.
Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Representative Murphy. The unique situation you're talking about is when you have a combined polling place, and sometimes the school districts have only one polling place, so they come to vote in that particular case. And is it possible that they live that far? Many of those very distant precincts also do mail voting, voting by mail, or they can do an absentee ballot. But yes, if they're in the polling place, again, it's not about being challenged. It's about if they don't meet the requirements of the law in regards to their identification and they cast a provisional ballot, then yes, they would come back to the county auditor. Technically, is there a situation where you might have somebody that also drives that distance to vote that may have left their ID at home, but they're on the road driving? I think that's a very rare possibility.
Mr. Chair, Representative Kiffmeyer, thank you, because I think it probably is a rare possibility too, but there might be a challenger at that polling place, and that person ballot will be placed in a signed envelope, and I don't know, that leads to my other question, is when the provisional ballot in any voting situation is put into the signed, stored in the signed envelope, does the individual sign the envelope, or does the challenger sign the envelope, or does the judge sign the envelope?
Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Representative Murphy. When it comes to handling the actual voting materials, such as an absentee ballot envelope or provisional balloting envelope, that is only handled by official election judges, and then any other information that is on there is required. And the inner plain envelope where the actual ballot is inside, that is not signed by anybody. That is a privacy envelope.
Okay. Mr. Chair, Representative Kiffmeyer, and then do I understand that after the provisional ballot has been signed and the auditor receives it, or the election is over and the auditor receives it, then the auditor is required to send a letter to all the voters whose provisional ballots were not counted. Is that correct?
Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Representative Murphy. It is very important, yes, that we have an absentee balloting law that we changed last year, which requires the county officials that in the cases of these ballots, when they are rejected, that there be a letter sent to them explaining that it was rejected and the reason why. And the goal is to help reduce the number of rejections. Because if they don't know what they missed on it, even though the counties make a great effort to help assist those voters, I think that letter in writing letting them know is very helpful, and that would be a requirement as well, that we would certainly want them to know that and understand that.
Mr. Chair, I think Representative Kiff Meyer, and I'm done with my questions now, but I think that it's kind of confusing in that if the auditor is sending a letter to the person whose vote was not counted and the address that the auditor is using to send the letter to is okay, why isn't the address that the person was using okay? And why did they have to go through the provisional? I know that they have to go through it because they didn't have the photo. But the auditor is going to be using the same address, and it's okay for him after it's not counted to send the letter, the official letter. I just find that kind of confusing to me. Thank you. Thank you, Representative Kiff Meyer.
Representative Gauthier.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Kiff Meyer, I'm a little confused, and I've been searching frantically. If I go to apply for a voter ID and I don't have any other identification, how do I get it? How do I get the ID, a voter ID card?
Representative Kiff Meyer.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Gauthier, in regards to getting a photo ID, the provision in the bill and the funding in the bill is a state subsidized identification card account, and folks who need an ID, do not have one, cannot afford to get one for whatever purpose that they have, they go to apply, and as they would for any other situation, and they would get a state subsidized ID card, voting ID card.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Gauthier.
Let me try again. How do I prove who I am and where I live to get my voter ID card when I apply?
Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Representative. The how do you prove that? The current Minnesota driver's license, Minnesota ID card, voter identification card has provisions in this bill that give the documents that are currently being used for that very same thing. And matter of fact, the identification requirements, primary documents could be items such as a certified birth record, adoption certificate, valid but unexpired United States passport. There are just a variety of options here. It's a fairly lengthy list of primary and secondary documents that the Department of Public Safety currently uses for all of our Minnesota people today in regards to, and the voter identification card would be the same requirements would be there for them as are currently being used today.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Gauthier.
Representative Kiffmeyer. My confusion is I don't have to provide a whole heck of a lot to get my driver's license. I just signed the form, and at least that's how it was when I did it. And when I renew it, I just go in and I sign the form, and they take a new picture, and that's that. And so I'm confused as to why we'd have to have a birth certificate or adoption record or whatever for the sake of voting. But that as it may be, that's your bill, and that's the way you want it, and that's okay. I have another question, Mr. Chair, Representative Kiffmeyer. The other day, I asked about tribal IDs, and you stated that you were working on that. And can you tell me who you were working with to clear up that issue?
Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Representative Gauthier. I worked with a representative of the tribal government, and the issue in there in particular was there were two parts of the current ID requirement through the Department of Public Safety that also required stating on the card that you're under age 21, you know, between 18 and 21, and there was also a color requirement. So those are the two items that we exempted from a requirement in the voter identification card.
Well, Representative Kiffmeyer, you may not know this, but I worked on a reservation for 22 years, and I've seen a lot of tribal identification cards, and they don't provide addresses to the owner or the possessor of that card. They simply give a picture and a tribal identification number, and they might include a blood quantum and the member of the tribe. So I guess my objection is that this bill would tell a sovereign government that their official documents aren't acceptable.
Representative Kiffmeyer.
Well, Mr. Chairman and members, first of all, they're voting in the United States of America, in the state of Minnesota, in our Minnesota United States citizens' elections. These are our elections for our officers, our elected officials for the state of Minnesota. And so when you're participating in the state of Minnesota elections, then the requirements of the Minnesota election law apply to you. Yes. And so any element of a tribal identification card should meet that same level of requirements as any other Minnesota voter would meet.
Mr. Chair,
Representative
Kiffmeyer, I understand your position, but quite frankly, you know, to make it about the state of Minnesota, these are people who hold dual citizenship. In fact, they are members of a sovereign nation, and they are residents and citizens of Minnesota and the United States, and your bill is flatly telling a sovereign government that's not acceptable. And if you want to do that, that's okay. To me, that creates another hurdle, and that's bothersome. To me, and I guess the other thing I just want to do is comment. We had testimony the other day about voting, and there are a couple incidences where there were statements made about people who were speaking in broken English, and somehow that should have been questioned. And Representative Kiffmeyer did tell me that you didn't have to be fluent in English to vote, and I did some checking, and state law talks about how you must provide documents in first languages or foreign languages. So I went down to the Secretary of State's office. Here's a voter registration card in Somali. Here's one in Hmong. Here's one in Russian. And here's one in Spanish. Then I had a little research done to comply with the 1964 Voter Rights Act, because if we don't do this, we could be sued in federal court. And Secretary of State Mike Holm, who was Secretary of State from 1921 to about 1954, a Republican from Roseau, provided information in Bohemian, German, Norwegian, French, Polish, and English, and Finnish, and Swedish, and Norwegian. And I guess my disappointment comes in as representatives of the government that we need to, quite frankly, educate people when they're off base. There is nothing in the law that says somebody who has a different first language is not a citizen of the United States. And the inference that somehow we should question their motive, to me, like this bill, is very un-Minnesotan, because it creates more hurdles. We're going to get rid of vouchers. We're going to get rid of same-day registration. We're going to do all the things that have made Minnesota great and create more barriers and more barriers. And to me, that's not Minnesota nice. To question somebody because they may have been speaking Spanish, to me, seems like Mississippi burning.
Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I think providing information, as Secretary of State, I also did. We provided information to make sure that there was an accurate understanding, and I think that is very appropriate. And just to clarify, this bill does not get rid of same-day voter registration.
Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a couple of questions on the DE-6, Representative Kiffmeyer. The first, I wanted to follow up on what Representative Murphy was talking about with poll challengers. It's my understanding that if you have to cast a provisional ballot, then the way that you follow up and make sure that ballot is counted is to show up at the county auditor afterwards. Is that correct?
Representative Kiffmeyer.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Winkler, that is correct that you would, if you cast a provisional ballot and you have not had the identification or residency as required on election day, that you cast a provisional ballot. And then to confirm that information, you would then go to your county auditor's office. That is correct.
And
Representative Winkler?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kiffmeyer, I think what Representative Murphy's point was that if you live 200 miles away from the county auditors, as some people might, you can still have your election. I mean, your polling place is still in the local area, so you go to vote locally. And if you have to cast a provisional ballot, you may have to drive, you know, not in all cases 200 miles, but there's a lot of greater Minnesota where you could have to travel a good long distance in order to have your vote counted. And that is a concern, but I just want to make sure that that's the case, that you know, if you live 200 miles from the auditor, you have to travel 200 miles to get your vote counted.
Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Representative. Just to confirm that that is the requirement of the law, and also that there are many other states that have implemented provisional ballots as well, and I think there are other states that have rural counties and other areas such as that as well. And actually, I think many of your rural folks who understand traveling distances, they go into town generally once a week. They get their groceries, they get gas, they do other business in town. They have children at school. They have a variety of ways that they conduct their business. And I believe that this is also an area that with the public education campaign as well, I think it'll actually simplify the whole process. Many times what I would hear from people is utility bill, this bill, that bill, does it have your name on? Is it 30 days before, 30 days after? All of those issues also contribute to long lines and also people walking away on election day because they didn't happen to remember which form of the document and what are they going to be bringing and is it right and is it not right. And we probably have more instances of people walking away and not being able to vote on election day because we have such a multitude versus the simplicity. Bring your ID, have your current address. If it is not current, update it as is currently the law. You are required by law currently to make sure that if you have those ID requirements that your address is current on your ID. And when you're driving to the polling place and having that information, the simplicity of that, I believe, will actually increase the voter turnout, increase the simplicity, shorten the lines, and make this a very Minnesota nice process.
Representative Winkler.
Mr. Chair and Representative Kiffmeyer, I know we've had discussion, there's been a discussion in the past about where you can go to get the photo ID, and I wonder, and I couldn't find this in the DE-6, and I wonder if you could maybe just explain to us where you need to go to get the photo ID if you don't have one.
Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Representative Winkler. The County Auditor's Office is the location for getting a photo ID requirement fulfilled.
Well, Mr.
Representative Winkler.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Kiffmeyer, Section 24 of your bill, which is deals with provisional ballots, on page 16, there are three grounds for having to cast a provisional ballot. One is if you are unable to provide a photo ID. Another is if your registration is challenged. And the third is if your eligibility to vote is challenged, and as required by Section 204C, 12, which I have in front of me. And I was thinking about what Representative Murphy was saying. We did have a number of people who came here and testified last week on this bill in support of this bill, based on their experience as poll challengers. And it's important to understand that an election judge is a job to administer elections. A poll challenger's job is to be in the polling place and to tell people and to raise suspicion about people and challenge their ability to exercise the right to vote. And so your provisional ballot system says that if you are challenged according to this challenging statute, which doesn't really give grounds for challenge, just says if you're challenged, you fill out a provisional ballot. What is there in this bill to stop an organized political party from sending out challengers to precincts and challenging thousands of voters in order to require them to fill out a provisional ballot. And then in your bill, if you live in a rural area, you have to travel a great distance in order to get your vote counted. Even if the ground basis for the challenge was frivolous, you've got no remedy except to try to travel to the auditor's office. In the metro area, at least in Hennepin and Ramsey County, not only it might not be a great distance, but certainly it costs you money to go down to pay for parking and do those things to have your vote counted. So based on completely unaccountable, frivolous challenges, which may be part of an organized effort to suppress turnout in certain areas, which we have seen, not so much in Minnesota, but we've seen in other states, we have seen organized efforts to suppress voter turnout. This bill makes it really easy to do that. You just have to show up, challenge the voter, and then they have to bear the burden of having their vote counted. And it seems to me, you know, I don't know if you have an answer to that, but it seems to me you're really opening the door not for greater election integrity. You're opening the door for more mischief, more suppression of the vote, and more games to be played by partisans who have organized poll challengers, as we've heard from in this committee.
Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Winkler. You know, Representative Winkler, as an attorney, I think you know well how to read the law. And on that same bill and that law that you have in front of you, it is not just a voter whose eligibility to vote is challenged with a period. It says, as permitted under Section 24C.12, there is a process by which you go through. It isn't just simply saying, I challenge you on those things. There needs to be a challenge, by the way, is a question from a challenger to the election judge. And then it is up to the election judge to review that challenge. But there is a process in 204C.12 that it includes here as well for that. And that is the same challenging process that we have in current law.
Representative Winkler?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kiffmeyer, yes, but the process for challenging is quite loose. And there is... there's really you're just putting an election judge in the position of having to deal with these challengers. And if you have an organized effort to challenge voters based on where they live, you're going to quickly overwhelm the election judges. And the only real safeguard here is that the challenger has to be a resident of Minnesota and has to give an oath saying why they're challenging. And it seems to me if this oath is such a great protection for a poll challenger, why isn't an oath that you are who you say you are when you sign a polling place roster not good enough? What you're doing is shifting the burden from voters. You're shifting the burden from people who want people to not vote onto people to allow them to vote, especially in rural areas. And it just seems like you're creating all this fertile ground for mistakes and for organized efforts to suppress the vote for no real purpose.
Representative Kiffmeyer.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Winkler, you know, we have a situation here where you're dealing with a hypothetical. In regards to that, we have current law that already allows for challengers and as permitted in current law. So I'll just stick with that, and we've been using this for quite a long time here in Minnesota.
Representative Simon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Kiffmeyer, on the DE 6th Amendment, I'm looking at page 5, line 5.28. There's a factor in here, a criterion that I haven't seen before. I'm wondering if you can tell us whether it's new or not. It asks for the person applying for a voter ID card to talk about the length of residence at the applicant's current address. Is that new, or is that language taken from somewhere else?
Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Representative Simon. This has been in the language of the bill since we on the voter identification card, so we have brought over as many elements as we could from the current Minnesota identification card into that. But the big thing on the application for voter identification card has to do with the fact that your requirement for voting in Minnesota is your length of residence. That is one of the requirements in order to be eligible to vote.
Representative Simon.
Mr. Chair, I just want to make sure. I know it's been part of your bill all along, but is that part of current Minnesota law? Is that one of the criteria currently for an ID card?
Mm-hmm. Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Simon. In regards to understanding all of the Department of Public Safety, all of their application issues, I think as most of us do, we've renewed our driver's licenses, but we haven't applied for a new one in a while. So I am not absolutely familiar with everything that is on a current driver's license or Minnesota ID card application. I do know that since this is an identification card that is to be used for voting purposes only, the elements required to be eligible to vote were those items that are listed here.
Okay.
Representative Simon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Another provision of the bill, or the DE6, on page 22, section 33 of the bill has to do with the public education campaign. And it seemed curious to me that the bill takes it out of the hands of the Secretary of State's office. It says that it's the Department of Administration shall do the contracting. It says that Secretary of State staff can consult on who the vendor is going to be. But then, explicitly, it says that whatever public education materials are out there, The Secretary of State's office name may not appear visually or audibly in any advertising or promotional items disseminated by the vendor. It seems to me that a lot of people in Minnesota who don't know anything about the system know that at least the Secretary of State's office is the place you go to if you have voting questions. I'm wondering why you would take the public campaign out of the Secretary of State's office. That's the first question. And the second question is, even if you do take it out, why are you banning any mention whatsoever of the Secretary of State's office?
Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Representative Simon. The main thing is that in the state of New Mexico, the Secretary of State there a few years ago was indicted for misuse of federal funds in regards to the HAVA money, and one of the contentions was a personal appearance in all of the public campaign information. And so I think it's very important, Minnesota, when former Secretary of State in Iowa also had issues with the federal government and the Help America Vote Act in their federal audit on the expenditure of their funds, but they also noted in that on the other hand, Minnesota, under the same audit, did not have any of those issues. So my concern here is just to make absolutely sure and clear, and for the most part, this is a very simple, straightforward media campaign. Want to make sure that admin would do the contracting, would do all the processing as far as making those commitments. It's a very simple, straightforward message. This does not mitigate the Secretary of State duty and responsibility to answer election questions and information, as they always do in regards to Minnesota election law. That's a current statutory requirement of that office. And that continues again as well. But this is mainly paying the money for the ads and all those things and the contracting being done by admin and the purchase being done by them. It's a very, very simple message.
Representative Simon.
Thank you. Representative Kiffmeyer, I understand why you don't want, and none of us would want, federal money or state money going to promote an individual, whether it's any constitutional officer. And I understand why no one would want the Secretary of State as an individual, whether it's Mark Ritchie or anyone else, to have his or her name plastered everywhere and make it into kind of a self-promotion tool. But this language says that the office of Secretary of State may not visually or audibly appear. I can understand a prohibition on the name Mark Ritchie or Jane Doe or whoever. I understand that. You don't want it to be a backdoor campaign tool for that person. But it seems to me Minnesotans look to the Secretary of State's office, not necessarily the Secretary of State, whoever he or she may be, but that office for voter information. And I got to say, I don't understand why we would have a gag rule here saying that the office may not be mentioned. I can understand the individual, but the office, that just puzzles me. But I'll go on to my next question, and it's just a conceptual question about the bill. I don't understand if someone right now is determined to commit voter fraud, And they're determined, despite knowing that it's a felony in Minnesota, which is at least a year and a day in prison, and they're bound and determined to go and vote illegally anyway, and there is an intentionality standard, as you know, so they must have intentionally done this and presumably knew the penalty. Why wouldn't that same person who's already willing to risk prison for at least a year and a day in Minnesota, why wouldn't that person just forge an ID card, do what college students do all the time to get into bars? Why wouldn't that person, or already willing to go to prison for a year and a day, heck, why not go all in, and why wouldn't that person just get a fake ID to vote if they're that determined to vote illegally? What do you think about that?
Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Simon. I don't know, Representative Simon, maybe you do about these college students, but, you know, I think the issue is that when you do have the electronic rosters, the polling books that do the barcoding of the ID, that is one advantage of them, is because that helps to determine that it is a valid identification card, that it is a valid number, and so that is a helpful purpose to that. But actually having an ID in hand and proving who you are and where you live is current law, and that I think is... I would hope that we would have folks that would have better intentions, but we all know that, as you said, there are those amongst us who might try and defraud the system. And so the electronic rosters have a built-in addition to that that is a helpful tool.
Representative Benson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was glad that Representative Simon brought this to our attention again about the campaign. Hopefully they don't seem too rhetorical, but the line of questioning regarding the imposition of the whole idea of having to come back to validate your provisional ballot, how much money are we going to spend on an advertising campaign? Can you remember that, Representative Kiffmeyer?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Representative Benson. $2.7 million will be used in the first year of its implementation. And by the way, generally speaking, statewide media campaigns are probably significantly less than that. So especially with such a very, very simple, straightforward message that we have here and some of the additional details as well, that I think it's a very simple, straightforward message, but that is a substantial amount of money. It is $2.7 million that we are appropriating for that purpose.
Thank you. And
Representative Benson.
Follow up. And as I remember the testimony from the Secretary of State's office, one of the reasons why we decided we needed to spend so much, and I can remember that you were happy to comply with that, with an understanding that in their mind, at least, to defend the constitutionality of this, that other states have done the same thing. So we can imply that everyone is going to be touched in terms of their obligation to bring the proper identification to vote on the day of Election Day, correct?
Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Benson. That is correct. And matter of fact, many times people do come to the polling place and bring their IDs, and they are offended when they are rejected from being able to show the ID, told, no, you don't need that. And I think that a lot of folks out there are perfectly ready and able and capable and willing as voters and as responsible citizens and with the public information campaign to be ready to vote and come prepared.
And would it be
thank you.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman. Would it be your understanding that if this bill passes, that we would begin this process, an advertisement as soon as possible, or do you think we'd spring this on them a week before?
Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Benson. Yes, elections are generally not sprung on people the week before, nor would this as well. There will be several months of getting information out there that would be very helpful to them.
Okay. No further questions. Thank you.
Representative Kahn. Okay. Seeing no further discussion or question, a roll call has been requested. Representative Benson, will you renew your motion?
I move that we pass this and it proceed to the Transportation Committee for...
As amended.
As amended.
The motion is that House File 210, as amended, be recommended to pass and re-refer to Transportation. Clerk will take the roll.
Lanning.
Yes.
Anderson.
Yes.
Fannion.
Yes.
Benson.
Yes.
Downey.
Yes.
Gauthier.
No.
Green. Gunther.
Yes.
Hayden.
No.
Kahn.
No.
Leidiger.
Yes.
Lilly.
No.
Lohmer.
Yes.
McElfetrick.
Yes.
Murphy.
No.
Murray.
Yes.
Simon.
No.
Slawik.
No.
Stensrud.
Yes.
Erdahl.
Yes.
Winkler.
No.
There being 12 yes and 8 no, the bill is passed and re-referred to the Transportation Committee. Members, we will not be meeting next week, and so we hope that everyone will have a restful and productive break, and meeting is adjourned.